This is the Pat O'Keefe Show on 98.7 ESPN.
Pat O'Keefe joining you. And, well, it was bound to happen. The Yankees' 11-game winning streak was bound to come to an end. But I'll tell you what, they did not go down quietly. Neither did their manager, Aaron Boone, who was ejected from the game in the eighth inning, arguing a called strike against Aaron Judge. But the Yankees' winning streak ends at 11, a 2-1 loss to the Toronto Blue Jays. But the Yankees still take 2 out of 3 games in the series. They have still lost only one series all season long. Inexplicably, it was that early series in Baltimore against the lowly Orioles. I think at this point, given the way the Yankees have played over the last 2 weeks, we can forgive them their transgressions for losing that series to Baltimore. But even in defeat, you come away feeling good about this Yankees team, and it's really starting to have a good feel to it. An 11-game winning streak against the team that pretty much everywhere you looked was the preseason favorite to win the division in the Toronto Blue Jays. They just missed the playoffs by a game last year, as we know. They were playing probably the best at the end of the season. They were the one team in that division that nobody wanted to face. And there was a giant exhale throughout the American League when they didn't get in. And then they were supposed to take the next step this year. And guess what? They have taken that next step because they're off to a terrific start as well. In fact, this was the first series all season long that Toronto lost 2 games out of 3. But they're 16-10 overall. The American League East, the top three, as tough as ever. And this is the scary thing for the Yankees. As well as they've played, you've got Toronto just 2.5 games off the pace. And Tampa Bay all of a sudden has won 3 games in a row. Who didn't see that coming, right? So the top three teams in the AL East, separated by just 3 games. You think at some point the Red Sox are going to get it straightened out to the point where they're going to be an above 500 team. So for all intents and purposes, the division is shaping up as many people thought, except it's the Yankees who are on top. But in order to snap this, have this winning streak snap tonight, the Yankees, down by 1 in the top of the 9th inning, loaded the bases, and then on the apparent game-ending ground out, they had to call for a review to make sure Vlad Guerrero Jr.'s foot stayed on the bag on the ground out by Isaiah Kiner-Falefa. So that's basically what it takes to beat these Yankees these days, is you have to escape a bases-loaded jam and then go through a review and count your blessings as you walk off the field. And if you saw the reaction, and take a look at it if you can, if you get a chance, the reaction from the Blue Jays after they won this game, this was a huge game for them. And that was in stark contrast to how teams have viewed the Yankees in recent years. Now, I know the Yankees are like the Lakers. They're like the Cowboys, where just the name itself carries a certain stigma. Like, it's a big deal when they're in town, and they're never going to lose that. But the Yankees aren't a team that on the field a lot of other teams feared in recent years, especially a team like this Blue Jays team. I mean, they don't seem like they fear anyone. Guerrero, Bichette, George Springer, Alec Manoa, their closer Jordan Romano. They're just a bunch of young, brash, talented guys. But Guerrero threw his fist in the air. He did kind of a full-out split to make sure that he stretched far enough to get the ball before Kiner-Falefa hit the bag. He pumps his fist in the air. Jordan Romano, the closer, the outstanding closer who the Yankees almost got to tonight, he had his two arms raised in the air above his head. It was a big game for Toronto. And it's been a while, frankly, since I remember seeing a team react that way by beating the Yankees in a regular season game. I know it came down to the final batter. If Guerrero doesn't make that play, it's a tie ball game and the Yankees are still up with the bases loaded and a chance to take the lead. But still, think back 10, 15 years ago. There was a long period of time where that was the reaction far more often than not when a team did happen to beat the Yankees. Now beating the Yankees in recent years it's not that big of a deal. It really isn't. But the way that this Yankees team plays, again, they got outstanding pitching. And even on a night when Nestor Cortez, who coming into tonight was the Yankees' best pitcher all season long, this was probably his worst game of the year, and still, he only allows 2 runs over 4 innings. He kept the Yankees in the game. His ERA balloons to 1.82. He gives the Yankees a chance to win. And guess what? The Yankees almost won the game. You're not going to win every single game. But even in a game that they lost, snapping their 11-game winning streak, you kind of come away feeling pretty good about where this team is. Now, the key for the Yankees, and what was the winning streak last year in August? It was 13 in a row, I think, they won last year.
I think so. And they had two stretches where they were like either winning 13 or they were winning 8 in a row. But whatever it is, it's a pretty remarkable streak for the Yankees.
But last year, they won 13 games in a row. And then once they lost that first one, they almost gave it all back within about two or 3 weeks.
And that can't happen again.
The key this year is the Yankees can't let that happen again. Okay, you need to get right back up on the horse. You're in first place in the division. You have the best record in baseball. Look, and you are coming back home to take on, let's be honest, not a strong team in the Texas Rangers. So now you have to continue to win series. You don't have to sweep every series. The name of the game is winning series. And the name of the game for the Yankees so far this year has been beating the teams that are eminently beatable. And they've done a great job of that outside of the Baltimore series. I mean, look at their last five series now. Take 2 out of 3 against the Tigers. They sweep the Guardians. They sweep the Orioles. They sweep the Royals. So those are four subpar teams in the American League. And then they play very well and take 2 out of 3 against the Blue Jays. So now you got to go right back and you got to take care of business against the Texas Rangers. You have a day off tomorrow, a weekend series at Yankee Stadium with the Rangers coming in and the Yankees sitting at 18-7. And then there's the Aaron Boone piece of this. Aaron Boone, look, a lot of managers would probably be content. Win 11 in a row. You're down 2-1. Let's get on the plane, enjoy our day off tomorrow, and get back to work against a weak opponent on Friday. But no, Boone, and he's done this throughout the course of his managerial career, and this is one of the things that he does best, in my opinion. He knows when he needs to go to bat for one of his players, especially for one of his stars. And Aaron Judge had a couple of tough at-bats in this game tonight against Marty Foster, the home plate umpire, where he was getting a tough call from the home plate ump. And actually, the play in which Boone ultimately got thrown out of the game on, if you look at the box on the telecast, that pitch was actually on the edge of the strike zone. But there were a handful of others, especially to Aaron Judge, earlier in the game that were not in the strike zone. And it was just a culmination of Boone showing his frustration. Judge was frustrated. Obviously, better Boone get ejected than Aaron Judge because it was a crucial point in the game. And Boone does a good job of that. Boone knows when to pick his spots with the umpires. And I've always liked that about him. He doesn't overdo it. He's not getting kicked out of the game every other week. He knows when to pick his spots. And almost always when he picks his spots, he is showing his team that he's got their back. He's showing one of his stars that he's got his back. That was the case here tonight. And hey, it was the eighth inning. The Yankees were quiet offensively all night long. Yusei Kikuchi had them off balance all night long. He knew Jordan Romano, one of the best closers in baseball, was coming up in the ninth inning. Maybe light a little fire under his guys, and it almost paid off. The Yankees did load the bases in the ninth inning and have a chance to tie or take the lead in that ninth before Isaiah Kiner-Falefa is grounded. So the Yanks have a day off tomorrow coming home. The Mets drop a tough one at Citi Field. It was a pitcher's duel until Adam Ottavino entered the game. Looks like a pretty tired Adam Ottavino. So as we talk about the Yanks and the Mets, we'll get reaction from the Yankees' loss in Toronto. We'll hear from Ottavino after his poor performance this afternoon at Citi Field. I file that under for the Mets, same thing as the Yankees. You're not going to win every game. You haven't lost a series yet this year if you're the Mets. You just split 4 against the defending World Series champs, an important division rival. Take that series split and move on to the next one. And then coming up next, we're going to talk a little bit of hockey. Dave Maloney, who will be on the call for Game 2, Rangers-Penguins, tomorrow night, right here on 98.7 ESPN New York. He'll be alongside Don LaGreca tomorrow. He'll join me after the break. We'll talk about last night's wild Game 1 at Madison Square Garden and look ahead to Game 2. What sort of adjustments do the Rangers have to make to even this series tomorrow night on their home ice? Rangers-Penguins Game 2 from Madison Square Garden. Look, it's a long night for everyone, and the broadcast level up on the Chase Bridge at Madison Square Garden, where Kenny and Dave were calling the game last night, that's a lot of standing, for 3, 4, 5 hours at Madison Square Garden. So a long night for those guys. They'll be back at it tomorrow. Dave and Don LaGreca on the call for us. 1-800-919-3776. We'll get to the phones in just a moment. First, Jets fans, the picks are in, so see this year's draft class along with your other favorite players on the green and white at MetLife Stadium for every exciting matchup this season. Jets season tickets are on sale now and come with the lowest prices and best benefits, so secure your seats today at nyjets.com/tickets or call 1-800-469-5387. Lot to be excited about there. I liked Dave's take on game one. Yeah, a triple overtime loss on your home ice when you are the favored team in game number one, when there's all this anticipation and all this buildup, and you have a 2-0 lead and you have a 3-2 lead, it's rough. It's rough because you didn't see the evening turning out that way. But the margin of difference between these two teams right now is razor thin. So you have to keep that into some perspective as you look ahead to tomorrow's game number two. 1-800-919-3776. Let's go to the phones. Let's lead things off with Dave and Comac. Dave, how you doing tonight?
Hey, how are you? I'm a big Islander fan, and I am ecstatic to see the Rangers lose. I hope they get their you-know-what's handed to them tomorrow night, right? And that they get swept by Pittsburgh.
Okay. Thank you. Dave, didn't the Islanders have a couple of battles with Pittsburgh in the playoffs recently?
But that's different. See, the Islanders have a much, much better chance if they will play in Pittsburgh at beating Pittsburgh than the Rangers do.
All right, Dave, thanks for the call. 1-800-919-3776. Now let's hear from Gerard Gallant today, speaking about last night's game. We heard Dave's perspective on the disallowed goal by Filip Hedl late in the third period that would have given the Rangers the lead and possibly a 4-3 victory in regulation. And I'm glad Dave spoke so glowingly about the effort on that play of Kaapo Kakko and just that line's play as a whole, because the effort by Kakko on that play, even before they disallowed the goal, that was, from start to finish, such a heads-up play. How many times do we see a skater flying in towards the goal? Either he's knocked down, he's knocked off balance, he's taken down, whatever it is, he hits the ice. For Kakko to have the presence of mind to A, keep control of the puck, and B, slide it back to his charging teammate, Filip Hedl, who put the puck in the net, was just an incredible heady play, athletic play. You see stuff like that and you realize the potential of especially Kaapo Kakko, who, as we know, 3 years ago was the number two pick in the entire draft because of illnesses and injuries and COVID shutdowns. It's been a slow beginning for his career, but you do see games like that. You do see plays like that where you realize what he's capable of. So we heard Dave's take. He said he wasn't surprised that the call was overturned based on how the game is officiated these days, how the goalie is protected these days. Here's Gerard Gallant speaking today when the Rangers were getting set for game two about the officiating.
No, I'd like to say I do, but you know what? It was going the other way in a 3-3 hockey game. It was, you know, to me, it was 50-50 call, and I sort of felt it was going to go against us. So I can't argue with that.
Now, here's more from Gallant on the officiating last night.
There probably should have been a couple calls made, definitely, when you look back at it and look at it. But, again, we're not going to complain. We're going to go play our game. And obviously disappointed that they got the 5-on-3. And, you know, so there's a couple hits like that. But you know what? You move on. You play the game. That wasn't the difference in a hockey game. We just got to make sure we play better for 60 minutes. We'll be fine.
No, the 5-on-3 was a big momentum shift in the game because, look, the Rangers led or were tied the entire time. The only time all night that Pittsburgh had the lead was when they were skating off the ice after the triple overtime goal by Evgeny Malkin. The Rangers are shorthanded. They have that absolutely brilliant goal from Mika Zibanejad to Chris Kreider. Brilliant on both ends. The place is absolutely berserk. They go back up 3-2 after they gave up the 2-0 lead. And then they have to deal with the 5-on-3. And bing, bang, boom, it was really textbook for Pittsburgh finding the goal scorer on the goal mouth and beating Igor Shesterkin to tie the game at 3. And at that point, 5 goals scored in the second period. That came very late in the second period. And nothing in the third, in the first overtime, in the second overtime. That was it until Malkin's game winner a little less than 6 minutes into triple overtime. So Gallant was asked about his and his team's mindset after the game one loss.
Move on. Get ready for the next one. I mean, it was a battle last night, and we came out the short end of the stick, but it's one game, so you got to move on. No big deal. We would have loved to win it, but you got to battle back and win the next one.
And what does he feel his team needs to improve on in game number two?
Consistency with our game. Like, you know, play that battle, play that heavy game for 60 minutes. You can't play it for 25 and expect success from that. Like I said, we did a lot of things right the first 25, and after that, they took over a little bit.
Well, it was the experience of that top line, Crosby and Letang and Evgeny Malkin, and that is really where this game changed, because the first period, it was all working for the Rangers. It probably could have been more than 1-0 after period number one. The building was rocking. The Rangers were playing physical. They were playing aggressive. They were playing fast. They had all of the momentum up until about the 25-minute mark of the game. And then, and this is where experience comes in. Tell me another team. Show me another NHL team where at the top of the roster, there is as much experience in the Stanley Cup playoffs as this Penguins team has. You think Sidney Crosby is going to go out there in the middle of a game two and be rattled by what seemed to be an unbelievable atmosphere at Madison Square Garden? Malkin, Letang? No, absolutely not. They imprinted their style of play on the game in period number two. They shifted the momentum. What did they have? 18 shots on goal in the second period, to the point where they were in control and had the Rangers back on their heels going into the third period. So they completely flipped the game over. And then in the overtimes, the Rangers never really seemed to be ultra aggressive going to the goal. You can't think of the one or the two really good scoring chances that just slipped through the Rangers' fingers that these triple overtime games usually produce. There were a lot of shots, obviously, but there weren't, you know, a ton of high percentage shots or high leverage shots from the Rangers in the overtime periods, or for Pittsburgh, for that matter. I mean, you heard Dave talk about it. When Louis Domingue comes in, he stops all 17 shots that he faced, but most of those shots that he faced, yeah, the stat line looks great. He did his job, especially in an extremely difficult spot coming in, but most of those shots that he faced were from the perimeter. They weren't the, you know, high quality shots that you tend to see sometimes in these playoff games. On the other side, I mean, we do have to talk more about Igor Shesterkin. 79 saves? 79 saves? I mean, seriously, think about that. It's unbelievable. I mean, the Shesterkin thing, going from Lundqvist to Shesterkin, it reminds me, remember when Mariano Rivera retired after 2013, obviously Rivera is the greatest closer in baseball history. But then the next 3 or 4 years, whether it was, I think it was Rafael Soriano for a year, it was David Robertson, ultimately it was Aroldis Chapman. The next 3 or 4 years after Rivera retired, the Yankees still had the best closer situation in Major League Baseball. This is very similar to that. I mean, you go from 15 years of Henrik Lundqvist, and I know the last 2 or 3 years, Lundqvist wasn't at the top of the sport in terms of goaltending production, but the vast majority of his career, you put that guy in net, and you know that you are going to have an advantage in that area over the other team far more often than not. And then you go from that to this, and this guy's 25 years old, and he's just getting started, and the one thing we hadn't seen Shesterkin do was start a playoff game. What we have now, I mean, it's unbelievable, and I've been saying this all season long, it really is unbelievable how good Igor Shesterkin is. And again, he's just getting started, and then he does things like the way he handles the puck, just on top of the utter brilliance of stopping pucks, all of the other elements that he brings to the game, his puck handling, his athleticism. I mean, it's almost not fair that the Rangers go from Lundqvist to Shesterkin. Is he going to win the Vezina Trophy? I think he should this season. Last night's performance doesn't factor into that, but seeing what he did last night, tell me who's a better goalie in the NHL right now. That's why it's so unbelievable that they basically went from one to the other. But at the end of the day, you've got to take advantage of it. Hank had a brilliant run. His jersey is in the rafters, but he went to one Stanley Cup Finals. Shesterkin is just getting started. If he's going to continue to play at this level of brilliance, you've got to take advantage of having such a star at the most important position on the ice. So game two tomorrow, Rangers and Penguins. Our pregame coverage begins right here at 6:30, and the puck drop at 7 from Madison Square Garden. They are human after all. It was bound to happen. Last night, after the Yankees beat the Blue Jays for their 11th straight win at the end of the game, Michael Kay on the YES broadcast said the Yanks are like DJ Khaled. All they do is win, 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 no matter what. Well, unfortunately for the Yanks, and inevitably so, it finally came to an end today. A 2-1 loss to the Toronto Blue Jays in a game that went right down not only to the final at-bat, but a review of the final out. That apparently is what it takes to beat the Yankees these days. And if the other team is celebrating on the field like they just won a playoff game after beating you in a regular season game in May to avoid a three-game sweep at home, that tells you that your franchise is getting back to the lofty position in Major League Baseball that it once held. And the Yankees deserve to be there. They're the best team in baseball right now, obviously in record, but also if you watch them day in and day out. It has been a collective effort for the Yankees. And I've been saying this for a few weeks now, since we got into the meat of this recently snapped 11-game winning streak. The fact that they're winning in different ways, it's so impressive to me. The Yankees, they can win 2-1, or they can win 9-1. The one constant all season long has been the pitching. Even in this game tonight, they didn't get great starting pitching, but they got good enough starting pitching. Nestor Cortez struggled with his command. He walked four batters in just four innings, but guess what else he did? He only gave up two runs. He threw 83 pitches in four innings and then gave way to Michael King, who continues to look like 1996 Mariano Rivera. I mean, what do the Yankees have with Michael King? Three more shutout innings, three more perfect innings. He struck out three batters, nine up, nine down for Michael King, as he lowers his earned run average to 0.51. Clay Holmes goes three up, three down in the eighth inning. So the Yankees gave themselves a chance to win. Tonight, Yusei Kikuchi, who's a good pitcher for the Blue Jays, has been for a couple of years right now at his best start of the season, had them off balance all night. The Toronto bullpen did a good job, and the Yankees almost got through against Jordan Romano, the Blue Jays closer, who so far this season has pitched like the best closer in Major League Baseball. And despite all of that, in the last play of the game, with the bases loaded and two outs and Isaiah Kiner-Falefa at the plate, grounded out to third base, the throw to first, Vlad Guerrero Jr., a deep stretch to make sure he beat Kiner-Falefa to the bag, and he almost took his back foot off the bag. In fact, they did review it, and the umpires confirmed that he did have his foot on the bag. Otherwise, the Yankees would have tied the game at two and still had the bases loaded with two outs in the top of the ninth inning. The other part of this is the top of the eighth, when Aaron Boone arguing a called strike against Aaron Judge. First, Judge was ticked off at the called strike. He was mad from a previous at-bat over some shaky balls and strikes calls as well. And finally, Boone, sensing that Judge had just had it with home plate umpire Marty Foster, started barking at Foster from the dugout. I believe he was ejected right away because then he tore out of the dugout, threw his gum away, and got his money's worth, as they say. And this was fun, too, because Foster, who's been around Major League Baseball for a while, he got his money's worth as well. The two things you don't see as often anymore are, one, just managers arguing with umpires in general, and number two, on the rare occasion that they do, and Boone does from time to time, I think he does more than most other managers, which is interesting because he's such a mild-mannered guy in everyday life. But what you rarely see now is when the manager is arguing with the umpire. Usually the umpire just kind of stands there and takes it, lets the manager have his say. He's already been tossed from the game. The manager runs out of steam, goes back to the clubhouse, and that's all. Marty Foster was going right back at Aaron Boone on the field at Rogers Center. It was kind of fun to watch. And for Boone, it was another example of having his guys back. Tonight it was Aaron Judge, and Boone has been good at that. Boone's been good at picking his spots, arguing with the umpires throughout his managerial career. The other thing about Aaron Boone is this. Now, I've been on this radio station for a couple of years, especially last year in the heart of their struggles in 2021, calling for, and I hate to say that I did this, but calling for a change in leadership in the dugout for the Yankees, because the approach, the fire, the execution, last year was such a frustrating year before the Yankees kind of stabilized things with that 13-game winning streak in August. But if you remember, May, June, July, all the ups and downs, all the stops and starts, the right-handed hitting, the striking out, the one-run games, the two-run games, scoring one run, scoring two runs. It was so unbelievably frustrating to watch. And I just felt at the time that the Yankees needed a new voice. My biggest critique of Boone since he took over as the Yankees manager in 2018 was that he wasn't a manager. And because he wasn't a manager, he was a player, he was a broadcaster, a very good broadcaster, but he wasn't a major league manager. Well, he is now. You know, you look at Buck Showalter, obviously he has all the experience in the world. Dusty Baker just won his 2000th game, ton of managerial experience. And then you looked for years at the Yankees being managed by a guy like Aaron Boone who had no managerial experience. Well, you've got to admit now that that's no longer the case. I mean, what Brian Cashman, and he's been bound and determined to get Boone over this hump, and I think he finally has. I mean, Boone's in his fifth season as the Yankees manager. They've gone to the playoffs every single time. They've had a couple of 100-win seasons. They reached the ALCS. He's managed in big games. He's managed through adversity. He has managed veteran teams. He's managed lackluster teams. He's got managerial experience. So the Yankees have kind of weathered that storm and gotten him over the hump to the point where you can't critique Boone anymore and say, eh, well, he was never a manager before. I think in year five, and this was a big argument of mine for years, and I'm admitting that it's no longer applicable, in year five, you can't really say, well, he wasn't a manager before. He's been a manager for 5 years of the New York Yankees. I think his experience is solidified a lot more than it was when he got the job. And he's finding his voice. And just like players get better, and just like pitchers get better, managers get better. And Aaron Boone, you know, in my opinion, is growing into this role. But one of the things, again, that he's always done well is stand up for his guys, pick his spots when arguing with umpires. And he's pretty good at it, too. You know, today he's all dramatic. He's barking at Foster. Foster throws him out of the game. Boone takes a couple of quick steps out of the dugout, dramatically takes the big wad of gum out of his mouth, throws it down on the ground, and then gets up in the face of Marty Foster. It's pretty good theater, and especially because you don't see it that much in Major League Baseball anymore. Let's hear from Boone after the game. First being asked about that, things got heated between he and Foster. Is Boone worried at all about getting a suspension?
Oh, I don't know. I was pretty mad out there, so yeah, I don't think, hopefully not any suspension or anything. You know, I kept it in control somewhat.
I mean, he got his money's worth, but I didn't see anything that would have warranted a suspension. He got tossed from the game, which he should have, and that was it. You move on. Great series with the Blue Jays. I called it a measuring stick when I was on the air on Sunday. We knew that this would be it. It was that for the Yankees and the Mets this week. Two measuring stick series, the Mets against the Braves, the Yankees against the Blue Jays. Yankees win 3-2 on a clutch ninth inning RBI single by Gleyber Torres in game one, so they show they can win that way. Game two, they just pummel Toronto and once again get fantastic pitching, winning 9-1. And in game three, behind the entire game, they tie it early on a Joey Gallo home run, fall back behind 2-1, have nothing going offensively, and still they are not an easy out as they finish the game with the bases loaded on a game-ending ground out
that had to go to review to confirm that the game was in fact over. So the Yankees and the Blue Jays, their schedule is very front-loaded this season. They split four at the stadium. Yanks take two out of three here. So the Yankees are 4-3 so far against the team that was the preseason favorites to win the American League East. Did Boone expect these types of games against Toronto?
Yeah, he just struggled a little bit with his command. You know, it was a battle for him.
He made some big pitches, really good, though.
Obviously, I have a lot of really good position players, and they can pitch, too. So, you know, we know we got to, you know, we know you got to play well to beat them. That's for sure. And, you know, fortunately, we were able to get a couple, you know, not able to finish it off, you know, and had some chances there. But, yeah, I mean, anytime you play these guys, I would expect it's going to be a challenge.
Up against a lineup like that and holding them to five runs in the three games. And obviously they continue to get really good starting pitching. But as good as the starting pitching has been this season, the bullpen has been otherworldly, and it's been so many guys. And it's kind of like this Tampa Bay model that I've been talking about for years, where the Rays just bring arm after arm after arm of hard throwers out of the bullpen. In many cases, guys who you've never even heard of or who don't even have much of a pedigree. Well, that's kind of what the Yankees are doing right now. Yeah, they have Aroldis Chapman. Chad Green has been a high-end relief pitcher for several years right now. But for every one of those guys, you got the Clark Schmidts, who's since been sent down to Scranton. Miguel Castro has been excellent. Clay Holmes pitched a 1-2-3 inning tonight. And then Michael King has been the best of the bunch. And what King is starting to do, not only in his dominance, and it's always tricky when you compare anybody to an all-time great, you know, by saying, oh, so-and-so is, he reminds me of Michael Jordan. You can make the point that somebody's game reminds you of an all-time greats game without saying that this guy is going to be as productive as that guy. And that's what I think people need to understand. So I'm not sitting here saying that Michael King is going to be the next Mariano Rivera. So I hope nobody misunderstands that. What I am saying is this. In 1996, when Rivera was still a unknown and was on the opening day roster for the Yankees, by midseason, he was the most dominant pitcher in baseball because what he would do was he'd come out of the bullpen, he was completely lights out, but he would do it for two and two-thirds innings at a time. And then ultimately, John Wetland left the Yankees, Rivera assumed the closer's role, and it was a role that he held for the remainder of his career. But that first year, and he finished third in the Cy Young Award voting in the American League in 1996. Pat Hankin won the Cy Young Award. I think Andy Pettit was the runner-up. And then Mariano Rivera, I believe, was third as the setup man, not even as the Yankees closer, because of A, his dominance, but B, the length of his outings. And just a side note, Goose Gossage, one of the biggest crybabies in the history of Major League Baseball, who complains and cries and whines about everything, one of his biggest beefs forever has been that Mariano Rivera gets too much credit because he only had to pitch one inning at a time. He didn't have to go the multiple inning or the multiple out performances like Goose Gossage and other closers of his day did, which is ironic because Rivera first became Rivera by pitching those types of outings. And then ultimately, he settled into the one-inning role as the Yankees' closer, unless they went to the playoffs. And then during the Yankees' run of four World Series in 5 years, Rivera would often pitch two innings. Michael King's doing that right now. Michael King pitched to nine batters tonight. He got them all out. He struck out three of them. And he's doing this now every time he's out there. He'll go 2 1/3 innings. He'll go 3 1/3 innings. Tonight, 3 shutout innings. I mean, what an incredible weapon to have coming out of your bullpen. This is what Rivera did in 1996. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying that Michael King is going to go on a run of dominance for the next 15 years like Rivera did after 1996. All I'm saying is what he has done this season in a smaller sample size the first month of the season is reminiscent of what Rivera did in 1996. And it's an incredible weapon to have. And even you think, all right, a guy comes out of the pen and he throws three innings. Well, he's probably not available for the next 3 days. The guy threw 33 pitches. He got nine outs on 33 pitches. That's how utterly dominant this guy was tonight and has been all season long. What did Aaron Boone think of Michael King's performance?
Yeah, he was great again. Just, you know, using everything. The two-seam, the four-seam, the changeup was a good pitch for him. So, yeah, another, you know, outstanding effort by Michael.
Yankees bullpen gave him a chance to win. King and Clay Holmes combined to pitch four shutout innings, not allowing a runner on base in relief of Nestor Cortez, who wasn't at his best, but he did his job in the sense that he gave the Yankees a chance to win the game, which they almost did. Cortez, four innings, four hits, two earned runs. He walked four batters, and that's what got him into trouble, and he also allowed a home run. Here's Boone on what he saw from Nestor Cortez's outing.
Yeah, he just struggled a little bit with his command. You know, it was a battle for him. He made some big pitches, though, when he needed to. And, you know, on a night where it was a little tougher, just, you know, I think came out of his delivery a couple times and sprayed some balls on him. But he made some big pitches. And you know, in the end, and not a perfect night, obviously, you know, kept us in the game enough. And then, you know, Kinger came in and, you know, we had our chances.
Two of the biggest changes in this Yankees team from last year are this. The wins are far more frequent, and even the losses. You come away from the losses, and there haven't been many. It's the first one in a couple of weeks. But you come away from a loss like this feeling good. You feel good that, hey, your starting pitcher didn't have it, and he still only allowed two runs. Your bullpen kept you in the game with four perfect innings and gave you a chance to win. And even on a night where you face a pitcher in Yusei Kikuchi who had you off balance and unable to generate much offense at all, even on a night like that, you still battle in the ninth inning, load the bases with a chance to tie or take the lead. So you go down swinging, you go down fighting, your manager goes down fighting with the umpire as he was ejected in the eighth inning. So it's just a good feel around the Yankees right now, not only on the wins, but on the rare losses. And that's the sign of a team that kind of has something going right now, and the Yankees certainly do. Now, did you like what the Jets did in last week's NFL draft? I mean, everybody in the world seems to, and I do too. I'm poking fun at the reaction to the Jets, but it is so unusual. But deserved so far, from what I can tell anyway, their performance in the draft and the roster that GM Joe Douglas is starting to put together. And if you enjoyed what they did last year, then you're going to want to see this year's draft class, along with your other favorite players on the green and white at MetLife Stadium for every exciting matchup this season. Jets season tickets are on sale now, and they come with the lowest prices and best benefits. Secure your seats today at nyjets.com/tickets or call 1-800-469-5387. It's Pat O'Keefe with you late on a Wednesday night, 1-800-919-3776. Yanks lose to Toronto 2-1. Their winning streak ends at 11 straight games. However, the Yankees do win the series against the Blue Jays, north of the border, taking 2 out of 3. The Yankees have only lost one series so far this season. That was a 3-game set in Baltimore on Easter weekend. The Mets earned themselves a split of their 4-game series at home against the Braves after they lose 9-2 in a matinee at Citi Field earlier today. So it's off to the road for the Mets for a weekend series in Philadelphia against the Phillies. A lot of early season divisional games for both the Yankees and the Mets. Yanks will see the Blue Jays again next week at Yankee Stadium after they have a day off tomorrow and entertain the Texas Rangers this weekend. 1-800-919-3776. Let's open up the phone lines again, and we go to Brian in West Palm. Brian, how you doing? Brian, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
I hear you, Brian. Go ahead.
Oh, how you doing?
I
grew up in Westbury, and I played baseball for Florida State. The umpiring at home plate tonight was horrible, and Aaron Judge has every right, because that ball to Aaron Judge, it wasn't even near the plate. It was like 12 inches away. So that umpire should he's a lousy umpire. You know what I'm saying? I umpired for years after I played baseball. I did Babe Ruth and stuff, and I was a good umpire. You know, I played second base for Florida State. I played for Dick Howser, and I know my baseball inside and out. Aaron Boone had every right to be pissed off. I would be pissed off if I was the Yankee manager. The umpiring in that home plate umpire was terrible. He gets an F in my book. Joe Torre should say something to that umpiring crew, because that's Joe Torre's job.
Well, it's the home plate umpire primarily, and you're right, Brian, it wasn't good, and thanks for the call. It wasn't good. And frankly, the umpiring this season, and I was making the point earlier how I am enjoying watching baseball more this season than I have in the past few years. There's a couple of reasons for that. We're hopefully on the other side of COVID. The stadiums are more full. I think even things like the shift, I mean, you can't watch a Yankee game nowadays without seeing another team line up with four outfielders. But even knowing that that's coming to an end after this year gets me excited. The games seem to be played a little crisper. You're seeing more stolen bases. You're seeing more bunts. I mean, watching Jankowski on the Mets or Tim LeCastro on the Yankees, these guys and the way they play with their speed and their taking of the extra base and their solid defense, these guys are like a breath of fresh air for people who grew up watching baseball being played a certain way. All that being said, one area that I am not enjoying seeing this year is the umpires, especially at home plate, the balls and the strikes. And it's as important as ever with the technology that is not only available, but built into every single broadcast. It's right there what's a ball or a strike. And sometimes you are missing these calls by inches, which in the old days it was bad enough. But when you're doing it now and then there's a box on the screen, I don't understand why some of these guys, and they're so stubborn. And Foster's reaction tonight, I mean, he had a bad night and then he compounds it by taking off his mask and going right back at Aaron Boone. So the umpiring was bad tonight. The umpiring, by and large, has not been good this season. It's been one of the downsides to what otherwise has been a pretty enjoyable season so far. All right, 1-800-919-3776. Pat O'Keefe on 98.7. Let's go to James in New York. James, how you doing?
Hey, Pat, what's up? I was just calling to talk about the Rangers. I was at the game last night with my son. I'm going to game 5, which I'm sure there will be one, with my dad. So it's been a great experience to have the Rangers back in the playoffs. But do you think that the Penguins' experience is going to be a factor coming back in game 2, or maybe the Rangers' youth is a factor that they can bounce back from a long game like that better than the Penguins maybe?
Yeah, I think the latter could be the case, you know, for a couple of reasons. One, the Rangers, look, it was the first playoff game for a lot of these guys, so they get that under their belt. They had, time-wise, pretty much 2 full games of experience for a lot of them. They realize that they can play with a high-level team like the Penguins. And then just the simple fact that not only are a lot of the Penguins over 30, but a few of them are in their mid-30s, and that's probably not going to be that easy to bounce back after playing nearly 6 periods of hockey as, you know, a guy like Kaapo Kakko or Filip Hedl or Alexi Lafreniere, Adam Fox, a lot of these young Rangers. It's a lot easier to bounce back, James, as you probably know, in your early 20s than in your mid to late 30s.
Yeah, I mean, it looked honestly, it looked like for the Rangers, the best guy on the ice through periods 2, 3 and into the, you know, multiple overtimes was Keandre Miller. He looked like a veteran out there. I don't know if those guys take the loss after such a grueling effort, you know.
I think there's positives to take out of it.
They bounce back.
I think there's positives to take out of it, and thanks for the call. There's definitely positives to take out of that loss. You don't know what to expect. I mean, yes, you played better than the Penguins during the regular season. You win 3 out of 4. The one game you lost was 1-0, and that was a well-played game, too. But the last 2 games, especially, that you played against this team, you handled them really well. The playoffs are completely different. How many games in the regular season was Pittsburgh whole? They had guys in and out of their lineup all season long. Now they're whole. They're in a familiar environment. I mean, all these Rangers grew up watching these guys on the Penguins winning the Stanley Cup. Crosby and Malkin and Letang. And now they're playing against them in that surreal environment. And we heard Dave Maloney, when he joined me last hour, talk about how it was even loud for a Madison Square Garden playoff appearance, which from 2006 through 2017, the Rangers went to the playoffs every year but one. And more often than not, they went to round two, a couple of times to round three. One time they went to the Stanley Cup Finals. I mean, we're talking about high-leverage, deep playoff runs in that building where it was always rocking. And for Dave to say that last night even felt different from that, and for these young guys to play in that environment and go toe-to-toe with this team, and where there's some mistakes, not glaring ones, but there are certainly some things you can shore up. You'd like to see the Rangers be more aggressive, especially than they were in the overtime periods last night. You want them to be a little more careful with the puck. That was an area that Dave Maloney pointed out that needs improvement, especially in that second period. But yeah, the experience, to answer a last caller's question, was a huge factor last night, because in that second period, about 5 minutes in, something switched in Crosby and Malkin, and that game completely turned, and Crosby willed it to turn in the direction of the Penguins. But you hope it works in the Rangers' favor, because it's going to be a lot easier for the Rangers to bounce back from playing essentially two full games than it will be for the Pittsburgh Penguins.
This is the Pat O'Keefe Show on 98.7 ESPN.